Tom Elliott, it's lovely to be with you here in the Unionist Hall in Enniskillen and talking to you about many things in relation to your politics and your life. Tell me first, where were you born and where did you grow up?
Okay, I was born in just outside a village, Ballina Mellard, which is about 7 miles from Enniskillen in County Fermanagh. And the house that I was born in, I have lived there all my life, haven't moved, born onto a family farm and have remained there since. And even though I'm involved in politics, I still manage to run an active family farm.
So you grew up in a farming background then. Your father was farming the land. And was your grandfather farming the same land before that?
My grandfather was farming a different piece of land that's still within the family as well. It was another brother farmed it, and I have a cousin who now farms that original home farm. And I still have the receipt of the farm that my father purchased in 1946.
My goodness, yeah. Just after the war. Yeah.
Just after the war is right.
And you came into the world in 1963. So what was it like in those early days of you know, your school days in the 60s, early 70s?
Yeah, the 60s and 70s, growing up in a rural area off a farm, I suppose, was always different to some of my friends who grew up in even a small village. It was a different way of life. And I suppose I always felt that I had a good upbringing. You know, I enjoyed farming much more than I did school, and I always enjoyed sport and particularly football. So those, I suppose, were the two greatest loves of my life, was farming and football. And going to school, I lived in a mixed community, a mixed religion, and a lot of my neighbours would have been Roman Catholics, and the bus that I went on to the local school had both Roman Catholics and people from the Protestants, going to two different schools, but still we travelled on the bus together. So I suppose I always grew up knowing my neighbours and knowing that they were from a different religion, and I suppose you became very aware that they were from a different religion because they went to a different school, they went to a different place of worship on a Sunday, and we did different things as well.
Okay, and so did that, growing up in that kind of atmosphere, was that something that, you know, gave you a sense of them and us, a kind of, you know, that you were separate to the other community or the other?
I think that did all right, yes, because you always knew you did something different. Mm-hmm. We went to a different school, we went to a different place of worship, and we did different things. For example, our family were very much involved in the Orange Order, and some of the neighbouring families were very much involved in the GEA. So we had no involvement as a family with the GEA, and people from the different tradition had no involvement with the Orange Order. And I do recall there was one family in particular that lived quite close, and we used to share help during the busy times on the farm. Making hay and silage, we would have been helping the neighbour would have been helping us. And they were Roman Catholics and we were Protestants. And I remember at tea time or dinner time, when you were around the table, you talked about everything except the things that divided you. And that's something that sticks in my mind. We never talked about the Orange Order or we never talked about the GEA. And I think that was out of a mark of respect for each other. However, I probably feel now that I've grown up and went through quite a bit of my life, it probably would have been better to talk about those things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I know I would always talk about them now when I'm with people from a different tradition. Yes. I would openly talk about the Orange Order and I would question them about the GEA, so at least there's more of an openness.
And so did you find then, you know, that because your parents and your background would that you were very much a Unionist from start, you know, from you're part of the Orange Order, you were That you wanted to follow that way, and did that lead you into politics, or was it something different?
Well, I always say I got into politics by accident, but that's a longer story. But you were always very conscious, and I was always very conscious of my unionism, of my Protestantism, and that I was an absolute unionist, but that I understood as well that the nationalist and republican traditions were to be equally respected, and their views were to be equally respected.
Okay.
However, their viewpoint was different to mine in those political terms. Many other terms were quite similar. You know, if you're talking about the price of cattle in the mart, or you were talking about the state of the land or the weather, all of those we shared the views on. But once it came to the political outlook, we were different. I knew it was different. At all stages growing up, I was very aware of my differences. And I would always have called myself a committed unionist.
What about being Irish? Did you find yourself an Irishman, or did you find yourself part of the UK, or a bit of both?
Growing up, I would never have looked on myself as being an Irish person. I would always have looked on myself as being British and very much part of the United Kingdom. And I suppose that became more relevant whenever I was, whenever I left school and I joined the Ulster Defence Regiment, part-time Ulster Defence Regiment, which was a home service battalion of the army. And because of my service in it, I never visited the Irish Republic. I was a member of the Ulster Defence Regiment and then became the Royal Irish Regiment for 18 years. And in all of those 18 years, I only visited the Republic of Ireland three times. And that was on for a day each time to maybe do something in particular. For example, one of them was to go on a farm visit to Sligo. And the other two were just on Sunday afternoons when we took a drive up through Donegal. So I never felt, because I didn't have that affinity with the Republic of Ireland, and because it was dangerous to visit the Republic of Ireland, I never did so. And that's why I think I became even more British and more felt that connection to the United Kingdom much, much more during my post-school times.
So when you grew up right through the Troubles, you were there from the marches in the 60s and Bloody Sunday in 69. And as a young boy, did that affect you?
It did. And it always did, I think. Because you were seeing it day and daily on TV, you were listening to your parents and visitors to your home talk about it. So it was constantly in your face. You were seeing it on TV. You were hearing it day and daily in the home. You were even hearing about it at school. So it was very, it just was part of your life.
Yeah.
You grew up and it was part of your life.
And so the Bobby Sands hunger strike, there was a lot of threat coming from Sinn Féin at the time. Or the IRA in the north. So was that something that put your community under threat, put you under threat? Did you?
Absolutely. You always felt a danger. You always felt threatened. And I think one of the big problems that we had was because we knew a number of people that had been either murdered or targeted and attacked, ever since that 1969 period, there were always serious questions about who was involved. Was it those neighbours who helped us and we helped during the silage time and the hay time? Were they part of that IRA movement in some way? Maybe not the person who pulled the trigger, but were they the informants?
Was there that distrust?
There was a huge level of distrust, and I think that was a very difficult aspect of growing up.
So, if you don't mind me asking then, you were in school, you came out of school. What did you want to do just then when you left school? Did you go on to third level? Or
when I left school, I went to agricultural college. which was just a 1 year intense course. It was where you lived in, so it was quite an intense. You were there for the full year.
Where was that?
Enniskillen Agricultural College. So I went to Agricultural College, and when I left Agricultural College, I worked for various farmers as well as working on the home farm. And then once I turned 18, I joined the Ulster Defence Regiment part-time.
Who encouraged you to do that?
I suppose there were some family members who were in it. An uncle of mine was a senior member of it, so he was obviously, and he lived quite close to me, also a farmer, so he was obviously very influential in that.
Okay, and so what did that consist of? Just give me an idea. What does it mean? Well, what did it mean to be a member of the Ulster
Defence Regiment?
Regiment?
Well, you obviously had to go through some significant training, but it was all on a part-time basis. I was still running the family farm, or at least at that stage my father was still active, so it was a significant part of the family farm.
Okay.
So still working on it, and at the same time carrying out training for the Ulster Defence Regiment. And then when you got through your, I think it was 6 weeks or 2 months training, you were then allowed onto the ground as a soldier. Most of those were all nighttime patrols. And you may have carried out two or three patrols a week. Plus you still had to do a certain amount of training, about 3-4 evenings training in the month. So that meant out stopping vehicles, carrying out searches, protecting other members of the security forces, and I suppose that meant that at stages neighbours who were from a different religion and saw you out on patrol, and I'm guessing they then became suspicious of me. I was suspicious of them.
Yes.
They were probably suspicious of me.
Okay.
And so it left that serious distrust and mistrust among the community that you lived in.
Okay, but did that turn you into somebody, you know, that was, you could have somebody living down the road that could be Protestant but would have very much the ideals of being a different, coming, you know, that would have been slightly different.
Well, absolutely, and even among the Protestant Unionist community, there were those who were suspicious even of the UDR, Ulster Defence Regiment, even though you were there as a protective force and protecting everyone.
Yeah.
And I have to say, when I went out, I made no difference about trying to stop attacks against Protestants or against Roman Catholics or against Unionists or Nationalists. I made no difference in that whatsoever. You were trying to protect people.
Were you ever involved in a skirmish or in...
Not directly, thankfully, no. No, thankfully not. I was close by, maybe, when some incidents had taken place. I remember speaking to a young man, John Early. He was actually a Roman Catholic soldier on the UDR. And I remember speaking to him that night that we were both going out on patrol together.
Mm-hmm.
He went on one patrol and I went on another. And he was blown up that night when he was out. And I remember one morning as well, being flown out. There were a small group of us who used to provide protection for quarry explosives at the quarries when they were doing the quarry explosion. They had to guard the explosives so that they weren't stolen until the explosion were put off. So a small group of us used to do that. I remember getting in one morning to do that patrol, and there was an incident we were called out to, and I was flown out to the incident. And it happened to be Jimmy Graham, who was the third of the Graham brothers to be shot, murdered. There were three brothers shot. And I knew Jimmy well. And he was related to my present wife, who had just started dating at that time. So I was flown out to that incident, and Jimmy Graham was the victim at that stage. So things like that have a significant impact on
you. So did that make you, were you bitter at the fact that, you know, or did this give you a bitter feeling, you know?
Of course there was a sense of bitterness, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. And, but it was this the distrust and the mistrust of your neighbours was the prominence, much more than the bitterness to me. It was that mistrust of people that you should have felt were my neighbours and were there to help, and I'm there to help them. And it was that general mistrust that was always to the fore in my mind.
The border. I mean, you spoke about the border and the almost not wanting to go south.
Yeah.
And was it, you know, was that a kind of a, you know, you were going into a different country, you were going, you know, you were going down south, you were going to a place where isn't a part of your way of thinking at all?
That's just how it felt. The Republic of Ireland wasn't part of my life, wasn't part of what I needed to know. I didn't feel part of it whatsoever. And even though I went those three times, and never had any urge to go. I certainly, there was nobody in my general community even wanted to go on a holiday to the Republic of Ireland.
Yes.
They didn't even, it was looked on almost detrimentally if someone decided that they were getting married and their wedding reception was going to be in the Republic of Ireland, you know. So I suppose that's just how it was. It didn't form any part of my upbringing.
Okay. So can I talk to you then about the, I suppose the Enniskillen bombing was the worst thing that could have happened in your lifetime, because so many people were killed in one day, and it's your neighbouring town.
I was in the Ulster Defence Regiment at that time, and I was meant to be taking part in the event in Enniskillen, and just 3 days before it, on the Thursday prior to it, I'd been doing some farm work, and I cut my knee with a chainsaw, and had to go to hospital and get a number of stitches, and they put a massive big plaster on my leg. So I had to keep it on for 10 days, so I couldn't actually go to the parade, to the event. Other than that, I'd been there. Now, in fairness, I wouldn't have been standing against the wall. I'd have been taking part in the actual parade. So I was at home, and the first I knew of it was when my mother came in from church at 12:30 or 12:20, 12:30. And she said, just heard coming out of church, there's been a terrible explosion in Enniskillen. Then his phone started ringing, and news started filtering through of some of the people who had been involved. There was a lot of information, and some wrong information was coming through about people who had been killed in it, and some of that not accurate even at the time, but it was just so much was happening at that particular time that it was very difficult to keep track of everything, and there was no social media then, there was no internet. The only link you had was by phone or listening to the TV or radio.
So what was the direct aftermath?
The direct aftermath was that there was quite a bit of bitterness throughout the community. Some of that was tempered because of Gordon Wilson saying that, you know, or the implication of Gordon Wilson saying that he forgave them. That divided opinion, even seriously divided opinion, where many people from the unionist community were saying, well, what right is he to forgive anybody? These people have murdered my loved ones, I'm not forgiving them. So it created even huge divisions around that. I suppose at the time there was a sense of frustration that Sinn Féin and the IRA were broadly, if not justifying it, not condemning it. And I just think, you know, that it left community relations even more difficult. And that sense of mistrust was compelling itself. And I think more and more people were even people that weren't maybe as deeply involved with unionism, with nationalism, with security forces, with politics, they were even being more compounded in their mistrust for other people.
I see, I see. And, you know, it was late in the time when it happened, and these peace negotiations, which seemed to be going on forever, how did you feel about this? Were you hoping that something would happen, or...?
By and large, I was always supportive of any options to help bring about peace. I wasn't for, at any stage, surrendering to the IRA, but I was always supportive of attempts that brought people together. But then you had things like the Anglo-Irish Agreement that just drove people further apart as opposed to bringing them together. And I felt that was... things like that were silly. To try to do things like that drove people apart.
Why did you think the Irish Agreement drove people apart?
The Anglo-Irish Agreement.
The Anglo-Irish
Agreement. In 1985?
Yes.
Because it was a process brought about by the two governments, the Irish and the UK governments, without any... reasonable input from people in Northern Ireland. And, you know, they just decided they would do this. And they said, well, you can take it or leave it.
Okay.
And that's not how you deal with people.
Mm-hmm. So, but things were changing, though. I mean, there was a sense of, we've had enough of this. And people started to come together. Do you agree?
Well, there was a sense that some people were coming together, but that was always happening to some extent. People, you know, were always attempting to... Some people.
Yeah.
Others were not.
Yeah.
You know, you had some politicians who just wouldn't, under any circumstances, come together. You had people in the wider community who, under any circumstances, wouldn't come together. So you did have people, yes, who were making attempts...
Mm-hmm.
To have discussions and try and further a process that would help Northern Ireland. However, on the other side of the coin, you still had the terrorists who were shooting innocent people in North Belfast or West Belfast or bombing them in South Armagh or Fermanagh and killing scores of people. And, you know, those two things, I suppose many people took a decision. I'm going to try and help support this process that are trying to bring people together. Or they're saying, well, I have to try and defend the people of Northern Ireland against these bad people. And it was very difficult to get the two to mix.
Were you affected by the Troubles?
Don't think you could live through them without being affected to some degree.
How badly?
I wouldn't say it... that I was very badly affected. Certain incidents affected me, but, you know, I was always pragmatic to believe that life had to go on and that things like this happened before, but it was so just unreasonable, I felt, that people's lives were cut short for no reason.
And did you think it almost became the norm day by day? You know, the way you can be involved in
did. At times you felt there was no hope of progress. Yeah. And, you know, I suppose I've talked about, you know, being flown out to Jimmy Graham's incident and talking to John Early that night before we went out on patrol. But I think one of the worst situations was that I remember going to a house and the man of the house, husband, father, had been murdered that day. I went to the house that evening. Met his widow and three young children, all aged under 10.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just thought to myself, why had this to happen? This man was just making a living. He was an honest person. He was a genuine person. He wanted to help society. And there was his family. There was his widow.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, I don't know what age she was, but I'm guessing she was in her late 30s. Left to bring up three young kids on her own.
I see, I see. So,
you know,
did you think you could actually help then by going into politics? I mean, was this something that you felt, you know, you now have the opportunity, you can go around and talk to people? Tell me, when exactly did you join the party?
Well, I suppose I was always a member of the party. And growing up, you know, you're always interested in politics. Yeah. And you'd have went to some meetings, and the Ulster Unionist Party was always a party, I suppose, that when you went to those meetings, the average age was always around 60 years old. So you always felt somewhat out of it. But I suppose I was always involved to some degree. My family were never involved in the party, but I always had a passing interest. And there was a senior member at one stage came to me one night and he said, you know, we are running three candidates in Erin North. We always run three candidates, but we always only get two elected for council.
Yeah.
But our third candidate has pulled out, has withdrawn. We're only 6-7 weeks out from the election. Would you consider running? And he was quite honest. He said, you know, you haven't much hope of winning. But anyway, so I ran and I didn't get elected, but I got, the taste for it. You did feel, and look, you feel when you're going into politics that you're genuinely going to make a difference, going to help. And yes, that's what I thought and that's what I felt. Yeah.
And so how quickly did you get into it? You know, you had to go around, you had to canvass, you had to meet people.
Yeah.
Did you target any particular, like the one side of society, or were you targeting everyone? Or how did that work?
Well, I suppose I was always involved in some community work. I played football when I was younger. I played football, you know, even when I was on the UDR. So you got to know people that you wouldn't have other ways of knowing.
Mm.
I was involved in the charity committee. I was chair of the charity committee on the Orange Order that raised money for charity every year. So I suppose I was always involved in that type of community work. So it wasn't too difficult to get into the way of local government politics. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a matter of going around, talking to people, listening to people. So the first campaign was quite short, simply because I was brought in at a later stage. But I done quite well, only missed out by 62 votes, so it came quite close. But I suppose I always had the interest as well in the higher level of politics, you know. Regional, which is Northern Ireland politics, and even national politics. And you always had that interest, so it was a matter of you hoped you could make a difference.
Mm-hmm. The Good Friday Agreement, did you think Northern Ireland became a safer place after that?
I think it gradually did. We had a ceasefire for some time, obviously, before it. But it was a time, it took a huge amount of time for many of the people to start trusting each other again. And so it wasn't a matter, Morris, of on the 14th of April, or whatever the day after the Belfast Agreement was signed, that you automatically thought, oh, we're in a much better place now. It wasn't like that. It was a gradual process.
Okay.
And it meant building relationships, building trust, and it certainly wasn't an instantaneous event.
And when you look at the releases from prison of IRA and UVF, I suppose, that were released, who were out there, you know, and caused havoc for that duration. I mean, were you quite comfortable with that?
No.
That they were all being released?
No. I was very supportive of the party being involved in the talks process.
Or were you? And what aspect?
Well, again, it goes back to what I said earlier. I was very supportive of anything was a process to try and help Northern Ireland. So I was very supportive of the party being involved in the talks. I was, I suppose, a soft no to the Belfast Agreement. And when I say a soft no, the thing that broke the camel's back for me and why I voted against it was because of the release of prisoners without having decommissioning secured. And I always felt that David Trimble bought the agreement too early. If he had let it run on for a period of time, he would have got a better agreement. And that's why I wasn't supportive of the Belfast Agreement as it was, and that was the reasons.
So living here, just outside Enniskillen, in your home place, if you like, has that changed much in the last number of years?
Do you mean the environment?
With the environment, with trust, with people coming together, with open communities?
There has been changes, and there's been gradual changes. And look, I suppose you... you look at things like local community groups, you know, that are working together now that wouldn't have worked together in the past. Organisations within the community that do things together. So, yes, that there is, and there is not the mistrust, particularly among younger people, younger generation growing up, that there would have been. The local town of Enniskillen 40 years ago, the pubs would have been quite divided, and certain cultures or religious people, if you're one denomination, you know, if you're a Protestant or a Unionist, you went to certain pubs. If you're a Catholic or a Nationalist, you went to other pubs. And there were a few that there was a bit of mixing with, but very little. But now that's all changed.
We would say... cricket and soccer would be foreign games. Do you feel the same about Gaelic football here in the north, or Gaelic hurling? Or are you the GAA games? Is that something? Would you attend a match, or how do you feel about that?
Well, firstly, I'm not sure why people look on football, you know, soccer or cricket as being anti-Catholic or Protestant games, because they're not. Because the local team I support, Ballinamallard United, you know, the first team, our first team that plays in the Irish Premiership, out of the squad of 20, there's probably at least 14 or 15 from the Roman Catholic tradition that plays in that squad. I'm not sure how that comes about, but we have always looked on the GEA as being different.
In what way now?
Because the GEA is a cultural and political organisation. It's not a party political organisation, but it is a political organisation in that it is committed and devoted to Irish nationalism. And it says that within its rules. So that is why, by and large, the Protestant Unionist community have never had anything to do with the GEA. And the GEA in Northern Ireland still insist on flying the Irish tricolour and playing the Irish national anthem at their games. Now, can you imagine Dundalk FC flying the Union Jack and playing the British national anthem before their games, or Limerick Football Club?
Yeah.
Like, that would be unheard of. It would be unheard of for that to happen in the Irish League in Northern Ireland.
I see.
Let alone in the south.
And would you feel the same about rugby?
Well, again, rugby, obviously I have a difficulty with the Irish team that they must insist on playing the Irish national anthem, but that's how it is. It's played in the Republic of Ireland, so I live with that. But certainly why the GEA continue to insist on having the Irish tricolour and Irish national anthem played at their matches in Northern Ireland, I have no idea. And it's really off-putting for the like. I wouldn't go to a GAA match because of that. And I'm a sports person. I know loads of GAA people, good friends with GAA people, and they know my feelings on it, and I make no secret of it.
Talk to me about, is your father still alive, or is he...
No, my father passed away in 2006.
Oh, did
11
he?
Years, yeah.
I wonder how he would have felt. Was he a staunch Protestant and Unionist?
He was indeed. He was never took active involvement in politics, but he certainly was a staunch Unionist, yes.
And so the coming, because I spoke to some farmers from say the Cavan side, and mm-hmm. so they would have, you know, they said that the cattle same color on both sides of the border.
Yeah.
Would your father have felt the same way? No, I mean, would he thought that, you know, I'll buy cattle from the south, or
oh,
I
yeah.
can trade cattle. From
oh
the
yeah,
north.
There was never a question about that. No, if he needed to buy cattle from the Republic of Ireland, he bought them. If he needed to sell them in the Republic of Ireland, he sold them there. That wasn't yeah. an issue at all. No.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But he was a staunch unionist, and yeah.
And that obviously rubbed off. Well, like, as you said, were you one of many siblings, or are you?
I had one brother and two sisters. Just there were four of us.
Were they affected by the Troubles in any way? Were they involved?
Not really. No, my oldest sister went to London at a very early age, and she stayed over there to work. And, then my brother was on the part-time Ulster Defence Regiment for a short period of time, only 3 years, but none of them were affected directly, no.
Yeah, and so your political life, you represent the unionists now in Parliament, so...
Well, I used to up until June there, when I didn't retain my seat.
But what do you think of Sinn Féin? Do you think they... have you respect for them now, after all those years?
No, because obviously they're, like, I respect them as a political party, you know, but I feel that there are many individuals within Sinn Féin who could help victims of society by telling them why they carried out actions that they did in the past, why someone's brother or sister or husband was targeted. I think much more openness from them would be helpful. And obviously, in the end, Sinn Féin don't want Northern Ireland to work. And they will continue to, I suppose, use their initiatives to stop it from working.
Mm-hmm. And are you going to continue with your seat? Are you going again?
That's a $50 million question. I'll decide that when the contest comes up again.
I see. Tom Elliott, yeah. It was a pleasure. I could sit and I could ask you more questions, which I intend to do in the future. But for now, thank you very much indeed. Thank you.